Welcome to this latest edition of our Workbench blog and all the news, updates and modelling exclusives from the fascinating world of Airfix. We have something very different to the norm in this latest edition of Workbench, as we will be featuring no fewer than three impending model kit release additions to the current range this time around, with this trio of models all linked by both scale and subject matter. In fact, each of the models featured will be of great interest to those readers with a passion for creating engaging diorama scenes, particularly those with a leaning towards British Army operations during the post-war Cold War era. With their rugged, go-anywhere, no-nonsense reputation, several variant incarnations of the classic Land Rover design have seen extensive British military service over the years, with many thousands of these fantastic vehicles going on to wear the military colours of Britain's armed forces. In addition to featuring our scale tributes to this magnificent series of support vehicles, our third subject is a lightweight modern field gun system which was designed to provide British forces with a highly mobile field artillery piece, one which was effective enough to bring down meaningful suppressing fire against enemy positions quickly, but also to be light enough to be transported either by helicopter or towed by one-ton Land Rover vehicles. We're all on rapid deployment duties with the scale modelling version of the British Army in this latest edition of your weekly Workbench blog. Although tanks, armoured fighting vehicles and tracked artillery pieces are unquestionably the glamour machines when it comes to our modelling obsession with military vehicles, this usually sees us overlooking the machines, which usually form the backbone of any mobile fighting force, the many thousands of vehicles which move men and supplies to and from the front lines every day. In the majority of cases, these vehicles can trace their lineage back to civilian commercial vehicle production, but whilst required to do their duty in times of conflict, make the transition to military service with little fanfare but plenty of endeavour. Throughout the immediate post-war years during the 1930s, and as the clouds of war were gathering ominously, the British government were acutely aware that their existing inventory of fire engines, casualty evacuation vehicles, and general service trucks was completely inadequate for what lay ahead, and immediately set in motion a significant programme of expansion. Officially encouraging many of the motor manufacturing companies of the day to return to the production of lorries in support of this programme, they were in desperate need of as many rugged and reliable, no-frills commercial vehicles as they could get their hands on, proven existing designs with a reputation for effectiveness. Using chassis designs which had already been in production and making only modest, if any, changes to cabin arrangements, the vehicles easily made the transition to military service, and would therefore go on to become hard-working general supply trucks with a multitude of uses, fire appliances and ambulances for use both on the home front and increasingly on battlefields across Europe and the Mediterranean. The mechanical workhorses of commerce were about to provide the same supply service for war. Despite the feverish production of transport vehicles right up until the start of the Second World War and through to the end of the so-called Phoney War, it's generally been accepted that Britain was still significantly under-equipped when it came to numbers of military vehicles of all types, a situation which was about to get much worse. Although the evacuation of almost 340,000 troops from the beaches of Dunkirk during the early summer of 1940 was nothing short of miraculous, and a feat which galvanised the nation to the task ahead, the fact that the British Expeditionary Force had to leave the vast majority of its equipment behind on the beaches of northern France was a catastrophic setback to an already dire logistical situation, and one which required immediate action. As Britain was plunged into a second devastating war of the 20th century, it's interesting to note that at that time, almost 30 companies in the country were engaged in the manufacture of commercial vehicles, including such household names such as Ford, Bedford, and Morris, along with lesser-known specialist manufacturers such as Scammell. Clearly, in order to address the supply issues facing Britain's military, these companies were going to have to come under the overall control of a central coordinating body, and the establishment of the Ministry of Supply effectively provided this. They immediately all but ended the production of the vast majority of vehicles for civilian sales, whilst at the same time also procuring vehicles from as many overseas manufacturers as they could lay their hands on. It's generally accepted that almost 530,000 trucks and tractors were produced by Britain's various manufacturing companies during the Second World War, a figure which doesn't include the production figures for cars, motorcycles or ambulances. Whilst this figure is impressive, it wasn't achieved without experiencing some significant difficulties along the way. Having so many different vehicles manufactured by lots of different companies meant that the management of this, from arranging for effective training and support, and for the adequate supply of spare part, proved to be something of a logistical nightmare. Not only were the British unable to standardise on a couple of vehicle types to make the logistics of supply easier to manage, but their inability to bring economies of scale to the operation meant that everything cost them more, resulting in less vehicles being produced. Nevertheless, the situation was so serious that this make-do and mend attitude had to be adopted, and taking all factors into consideration, the British managed to keep their supply wheels turning. For those service personnel charged with maintaining these supply lines, there was a distinct lack of protection when it came to their vehicles, and even though they often found themselves heading towards combat zones with their valuable cargoes, they did so in trucks which were nothing more than commercial vehicles sporting a military paint finish, and that wasn't going to stop small arms fire and shrapnel. The end of the Second World War allowed British military planners the opportunity to reflect and review their performance and effectiveness over the previous few years, now freed from the immense pressures of conflict. It was clearly evident that the strain placed on ground forces by the lack of vehicle type commonality created further pressures which, whilst unavoidable at the time, would prove extremely problematic. Particularly during the early part of the war, British equipment had to be abandoned in the field for the lack of availability of even the most basic of spares, such as small bolts and other seemingly insignificant parts. Astonishingly, it was estimated that this lack of type standardisation added well over £1 billion, revalued with inflation, to the cost of war, something which could not be allowed to continue post-war. That being the case, the main review task of the Ministry of Supply was to standardise and rationalise, whilst at the same time maintaining the effectiveness of the force moving forward, and during a period where the national purse was going to come under increasing strain. To put their challenge into perspective, it was reported that by the end of 1944, there were around 600 makes, variants of support and transport vehicle types in service with the British Army, many of which were adapted civilian vehicles which were not designed to military specification. Angular and purposeful, most people probably wouldn't expect a rugged and hard-working utility vehicle to attract the admiration of the motoring world. However, the Land Rover isn't like most vehicles, and that's exactly what this range effectively managed to do. Entering production back in 1948, the Land Rover was an attempt by the Rover Company in Britain to re-enter the motoring market during the financial austerity of the post-Second World War period, producing an affordable agricultural and light industrial vehicle which possessed a multitude of use applications, similar to how the Jeep proved to be such a revelation during the Second World War, but in a subtly different way. The Land Rover was designed with little in the way of driver comfort and unnecessary frills in mind, but was intended to operate effectively in the most demanding of situations, quickly earning a reputation for practicality and reliability. The pickup version featured an enclosed cab and open rear compartment, which could be used to transport anything from farm machinery to livestock and animal feed over all kinds of terrain. If you had a tough motoring job that needed doing, Land Rover had just the vehicle for you. From those humble beginnings, Land Rover went on to create something of an automotive phenomenon, although it has to be said that the vehicles which proudly wear that name to this day are very different to the Series 1 vehicles which first rolled off the production lines. For those originals, luxuries and the latest levels of driver/passenger comfort were way down the list of priorities. They were all about functionality and reliability. Some have even described the first Land Rovers as possessing the sophistication of a petrol-powered lawnmower, but then usually qualify the statement by including how it may have been basic, but was also wonderfully capable. The concept behind the Land Rover was that this was essentially a farmer's friend, a vehicle which would help him go about his business efficiently with an absolute lack of fuss. When he needed it, the Land Rover would always be ready for action. Built around a strong and highly effective ladder-type chassis, the aluminium body was light and robust, meaning that the vehicle could be powered by a relatively low power output engine, but one which, with the use of a high and low range four-wheel drive system, allowed the vehicle to handle almost any terrain. On open roads, the speedometer may have indicated 70 miles per hour, and above, however, the Land Rover was certainly not built for speed, and anything over 50 miles per hour was an achievement and a rather noisy experience. There certainly wouldn't have been any need for a radio. Unusually, the fuel tank and petrol cap were positioned under the driver's seat on the early models, allowing the driver to have a visual indication of the fuel levels should the gauge be playing up, which it was prone to doing, and as for the fuel itself, this engine would run on virtually any octane grade of petrol. The longer wheelbase and larger load-carrying area of the station wagon 107 series gave the vehicle incredible versatility and opened up its usage potential to many trades and business applications. In its role as the farmer's friend, the additional space the station wagon offered made it useful when carrying anything from fencing equipment and light machinery to large amounts of animal feed for outlying livestock at times of poor weather. Most farmers would also tell you that after a sweep out, it also made for the perfect mode of transport for travelling to and from the local pub with a group of fellow farmers. Even though the nominated driver on such an occasion had definitely drawn the short straw. The rugged adaptability of the Land Rover also extended to the doors, which were hinged to open fully back 180 degrees onto the wing panels for accessibility, with the top section being fully removable, should it prove to be one of those rare warm summers here in the UK, a form of natural air conditioning. In many respects, the Land Rover was designed to fend for itself, with its owners wanting nothing more than to fill it with fuel and get on with their busy day, and in this regard, the Land Rover proved to be exceptional. Described as the finest off-road capable vehicle of its generation, these vehicles may not have been kept in pristine condition, but they were loved for their rugged simplicity nonetheless, and relied upon for their functionality. Even if your Land Rover had a prang and sustained a few dents and scratches, a quick lick of paint would have it looking as good as new. Well, at least in acceptable farmyard condition. Establishing a worldwide reputation which endures to this day, many manufacturers have attempted to follow where these vehicles pioneered. But in the world of rugged, functional vehicles, Land Rover reigned supreme. During the Second World War, some of the most successful utility vehicles used by Allied forces were the Willys Jeep and Chevrolet Truck Series, both of which were used by British forces in some numbers. Following the cessation of hostilities, the British government started looking at the prospect of developing a similar, more capable vehicle for widespread military use, handing the project to the Nuffield Company under Project FV1800. The prototype vehicle ran for the first time in 1945. However, official tinkering, ever-changing specification requirements, and development overruns meant that the new vehicle didn't enter production until the early 1950s. This vehicle was the Truck 1/4 Ton CT 4x4 Cargo and FFW Austin Mark 1, more commonly referred to as the Austin Champ. It was actually an extremely impressive vehicle, possessing great off-road performance and exceptional waterfording capabilities, and offered the British Army one of the most effective vehicles of its kind to be found anywhere in the world. Unfortunately, the Champ was of rather complex design and was incredibly expensive, both of which proved significant enough to have its use in the British military question whilst still relatively early in its service life. Alongside the Army's adoption of the Austin Champ during the early 1950s, they also procured a trial batch of Series 1 Land Rovers to see how they stacked up against their high-profile competitor, and the results were something of an eye-opener. Just as impressive in almost every aspect of performance, the Land Rovers were easier to maintain, could do almost everything the Austin Champ could do, and were half the price per unit. Arguably, they also possessed much greater development potential in a military role, and it didn't take long for the Ministry of Supply to cotton on and switch their allegiance. Just 4,000 vehicles into what should have been a procurement plan for over 15,000 Austin Champs, the contract was cancelled, and the Land Rover received the call for military service. The rest, as they say, is the stuff of British Armed Forces history. A vehicle which may well have been very different in appearance to the ones which went before it, but was still 100% Land Rover in terms of performance and effectiveness, the Forward Control 101 Land Rovers, Truck General Service, 1-ton 4x4, Land Rover 101, were a later design to build on the incredible success of the Land Rover in British military service. First announced in the early 1970s, these vehicles were produced specifically for military use and to meet a British Army requirement for a rugged new vehicle which was capable of towing loads up to 4,000 pounds. Designed with power, off-road capability, and durability as their main attributes, these vehicles were officially rated at 1 ton of load-carrying capability and were powered by a Rover 3.5-litre 5.8 engine, utilising a host of feature improvements to further enhance the legendary handling performance of the Land Rovers, which were already in service. Unquestionably, the most significant difference was the repositioning of the crew compartment to one placed over the engine, giving the 101 a distinctly flat-fronted appearance, one which was further accentuated by the vehicle's loft ground clearance, making this very different from any Land Rover that had gone before it. They were initially developed to operate as a gun tractor, one capable of pulling the 105mm light howitzer, along with a sizeable amount of ammunition for the weapon, ultimately around 1 ton of it. The reason for the radical appearance redesign was to enable the vehicle to be transported more effectively by air, with the forward control cab making this operation much easier and safer. In operation, the repositioned cab made driving the 101 quite different to that of its predecessors, much more like driving a high-performance truck than a traditional Land Rover. That being said, it did provide the driver with a great deal of confidence in his vehicle, almost as if he was the king of the off-road and in charge of a vehicle that could literally be driven anywhere over almost any terrain imaginable. These capable machines were in production from 1975 until 1978, and whilst this might only have been a relatively modest production run by Land Rover standards, with only 2,669 vehicles manufactured, they are still regarded as being incredibly successful vehicles in the role for which they were intended. Indeed, many would go on to find a new role following their service retirement, undergoing conversion to become rugged camper vans for civilians with an adventurous nature, the only vehicle in which to travel if you were that way inclined. Although every one of these particular vehicles left the factory in soft top configuration, many would go on to be rebodied to fulfill several other military roles, such as ambulances, radio communications vehicles, and the much rarer Vampire electronic warfare vehicles. The various Land Rovers to see British military service went on to create an extraordinary reputation for themselves. Still in service to this day, after an incredible 76 years, the program to find its replacement has only just been initiated, and it will be a sad day when these rugged and effective vehicles are all finally demobbed. Ultimately, the only vehicle capable of replacing a Land Rover is another Land Rover, so it remains to be seen what the British Army come up with next. The heyday of these incredible vehicles in terms of service numbers was unquestionably the Cold War era. However, the Land Rover has created a transport and utility legacy which will surely never be equaled by any other vehicle type, and will live long in the hearts of those who operated and maintained them during their military service careers. A weapon which was intended to be towed by the British Army's Forward Control Land Rover fleet, the 105mm light field gun may well have been slightly heavier than the weapon it replaced, but was pretty closely aligned with the Land Rover in terms of its rugged build and go-anywhere capability. A close support weapon system, this gun was designed to support mobile troops in advanced combat situations, so in many respects, needed to share many of the attributes of the Land Rover in terms of reliability, ease of use and portability, in addition to laying down meaningful artillery support as and when required. In addition to being towed by the Forward Control Land Rovers, these guns could easily be transported by Britain's fleet of medium and heavy lift helicopters, and were therefore used effectively by special operations troops and those of the commando force. The gun features an innovative cured tube rear support arrangement which is fixed and doesn't need to be splayed out prior to the gun being fired. This means that deployment in combat situations can be extremely rapid, and with an experienced crew using all the design capabilities of this gun, its suppressing fire can be brought to bear 30 seconds after arriving in the combat zone. Although a relatively light unit, the L118 is still an incredibly effective weapon, possessing vital support capabilities for troops fighting on a modern battlefield. Rugged, extremely reliable, and with an excellent rate of fire, these guns are often thrown about prior to arriving in the combat zone, but are designed to be quickly prepared for operation and fire its opening salvo in just a matter of seconds, with checking and maintenance all taking place after their services have been dispensed with. A critical component of any airborne assault or commando raid, these light guns were extremely successful both at home and overseas, with well over 1,000 of these weapons seeing service with 23 countries worldwide. The L118 light gun uses separate loading ammunition, with the projectile being loaded first, followed by the propellant charge, which can be of varying levels of power, dependent on the distance to be covered or the type of projectile delivered. Ammunition might include high explosive, smoke, illumination, and target marking rounds, with a usual rate of fire of between 6 and 8 rounds per minute. The maximum delivery range is just over 17 kilometers, and when combined with the gun's automatic pointing system, it can be unlimbered and delivering round in just 30 seconds or so. The automatic pointing system utilizes an internal navigation system, which the operator accesses using a computer touchscreen, replacing the dial sight which was common on earlier guns of this type. During the Falklands War of 1982, 30 of these guns were used to great effect and were significant in supporting British forces in successfully retaking the islands. During the final assault against Port Stanley, these guns were positioned around the town, with each unit firing up to 400 rounds each day, a withering rate of fire which kept troops of the invading forces hunkered down in their defensive positions for the duration of the onslaught. Image U. The modeler is presented with no end of options for this delightful little field gun model, as the weapon has been produced in large number and seen service with 23 countries around the world. Entering British military service in 1976, the light gun 105mm towed howitzer remains in service to this day, and has proved its capabilities many times in combat and during live fire and tactical training operations over that time, whether being towed behind a Land Rover or underslung beneath a Chinook helicopter. These guns love to be where the action is and like nothing more than supporting operations in advanced or demanding situations. All three of the kits reviewed above have been staple fare for military and diorama modelers over the years, and as they have been becoming increasingly difficult to get hold of in recent times, their 2025 range inclusion will have come as a pleasant surprise for many. The 105mm light field gun is already in stock and available, with the two Land Rovers now also scheduled for imminent release. Please keep an eye on the Airfix website for the latest availability updates. Add Diorama Delights. We can't wait to see if anyone is skillful and motivated enough to create a Chinook and L118 underslung load diorama, because that would be quite a sight. If you're planning such a thing, please do drop us a line so we can feature your build in a forthcoming edition of Workbench. We are afraid that's all we have for you in this latest edition, but we will be back next Friday with more project development updates and the very latest Airfix kit exclusives. In the meantime, we are always keen to hear your views on all things Airfix, and in particular, any thoughts and opinions you may have regarding our Workbench blog. If you would like to drop us a quick line, could we please ask that you use our Workbench at airfix.com email for all correspondence. To revisit any of the Airfix blogs we have produced over the past 7 years or so, please head to our main Workbench hub, where you will find our entire blog back catalogue and all the Airfix design projects we have already covered. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, feel free to follow and rate us 5 stars if you've enjoyed. We'll see you next week for another installment of Workbench. This podcast audio was generated by AI using text written by a human.